Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and we're here to talk about the mathematics of the SECURE Act. Let's jump right in. So we understand the big thing here is Congress has changed the payouts from life expectancy to a 10-year rule. Now, there's exceptions to that. You could actually end up with a 5-year rule. You could end up with the ghost life expectancy. You could end up being an eligible designated beneficiary where you get stretch. But today we're really going to focus on the person who's up against the 10-year rule and the mathematics of the different options they have. Now, from a strategic standpoint, you can always leave your IRA to your spouse and your spouse can do a rollover. But that, in essence, if you will, quote, kicks the can down the road, end quote. I mean, it does us no good. It moves the problem out 5 or 10 years. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but it's important for us to know that is still very much available. We're going to talk about Roth conversions today. We'll also talk about IRAs to CRTs, and we'll talk about IRA relocation using life insurance. Finally, we're going to talk about a few other things. Multi-generational spray trust designed to spray trust income D&I across a large family. Secondly, you would also talk about IRA trust for state income tax savings. And then finally, we're going to talk a little bit about 678 trusts. A 678 trust is simply, my dad dies, his IRA goes to a trust for me. I have the right to pull all the income out of that trust. If drafted correctly, that is a grantor trust, and all the income of that trust shows up on my tax return rather than the trust tax return, even though we're retaining the dollars in the trust. Now, when you do a 678 trust, though, put in the back of your mind, you're going to want to probably do that in a state that has self-settled trust statutes so that what happens is you do not have to, that's not subject to claims of your creditors. We also have to look at basically running the numbers to prove this one way or the other. And that's going to be a very big task, okay? So that will be a very big task. So again, we're going to mostly start with looking at the three core solutions, Roth conversions, IRAs to CRTs, and life insurance. So the first question is your client charitably inclined? If they're charitably inclined, we may well go down a path to explore the CRT. What you would do there is you would run numbers. You'd assume the person dies a month after the analysis and the IRA goes to the CRT. What does that look like? And under what circumstances does it work well, and under what circumstances does it work poorly? We'll talk about that a little bit today. If the client is not charitably inclined, then what we're going to do is we're going to jump into an analysis of the insurance options or the Roth conversion options. Now, this is predicated upon law we do not know, because today we have an exemption from the estate tax of over $11.5 million, okay? So that's our exemption times two for a married couple. You know the drill. Now, we're going to sunset where we'll go down to half of that on January 1st, 2026. And then we also have the possibility, depending on who's elected to the presidency and who controls Congress, of seeing a wealth tax. In the Democratic debates, that's a very rigorous discussion. It's very clear where they're going with this. And if that happens, that's what our planning will be up against. So that's exactly what we're going to be up against on a going forward basis. So we really do have to work through that. Now, when we look at all this, if you're going to have an estate tax, you're more likely to use insurance over in a life insurance trust than you are to do a Roth conversion. The problem with the Roth conversion, it's going to stack up in your estate. So if you're going to have an estate tax, think about the insurance. If If you're not going to have an estate tax, think about the Roth conversion. Now, you can still do Roth conversions for someone that's going to have an estate tax, and it can still save them a considerable amount of wealth. So if somebody is 60 and very much insurable, you're going to go down the insurance route. If somebody is 82 and may live another 5 or 10 years but not insurable or not insurance is impractical, then we're going to go down the Roth route. The beauty of the Roth when it comes to the estate tax, though, is it's better to die with a Roth IRA than to run the gauntlet of the 691C deduction. Remember, the 691C deduction is an income tax deduction for the estate tax paid. So that's an income tax deduction for the estate tax paid. If you're following along in the materials, on the sixth slide, I give you a little bit of information on just four. There's a grid there discussing the Roth conversion, charitable trusts, IRA relocation, and spousal rollover strategies. Again, the spousal rollover strategy, I think it's kicking the can down the road. Now, the old best practice, of course, up on page 7, is to roll over the individual retirement account when the first spouse dies. For small accounts, that's still a very viable option. For larger accounts, you may be better to disclaim some of that up front, because mathematically, then you're going to start a 10-year rollover the first spouse's life. If the surviving spouse lives 8 or 10 years, you've maybe taken the money out over a 15 to 20-year period of time instead of a strict 10-year period of time. You basically combine two 10-year periods is what you're trying to do. So the new potential best practice up on page 9 may be to let some of it go to children at the first death, let the rest go to the children at the second death. So that's an idea, and that's something that you're going to be having to work with your clients on. Now, on the Roth conversion side of things, the real goal with Roth conversions is that instead of taking the money out over a 10-year period of time, I want to pay tax on it over a 25-year period of time. From the time my wife and I are 60 to the second of us die at, say, age 85. Looking at that, what you're doing is you're threading the needle through lower tax brackets. On page 12, I have the typical bracket pyramid. But look at where we are. If a trust would pay income tax, remember, at 37% once the IRA goes to the trust, or children might be in a 24, 32, 35% bracket. Now, remember, we also have to remember we're going to sunset brackets at some point in time. If my wife and I can thread the needle and do micro conversions, write that word down. That is a word that will resonate with your clients. It's a very safe word, micro conversions. We're defining micro conversions as conversions in the 10 or 12% bracket, or very small conversions in 22 or 24%. If you have $1 million in your IRA, a micro conversion might be $50,000. And you would do these micro conversions over time and eventually pay your tax at 22% to avoid those higher brackets after your children die. That's the gist of it. Now, you also want to get money to the Roth side while you're still married, because once one spouse dies, take a look at what happens to the single brackets. It's very obvious. The single brackets are basically the breaks are half of where the married breaks are. So for a married couple, up to 326, tremendously large number, you're only in the 24% bracket. Single person, 163. Now, where this really matters is when the income isn't going to change much between married and single, because husband and wife both have large IRAs. Wife rolls over the IRA. You can see the drill. Now, on page 13 of your materials, I just show you married, single, and the 2017 married. If you look at this, if you draw a line from the 2020 married to the right, you can see where a single person would be. Husband and wife are married. They get to use the 2020 married brackets. One of them dies for 2021, we're jumping into that single bracket. And the top of the 24% when you're married is actually the 35% bracket when you're single. So take a look at that. And then on the other side of the equation, this 2017 married just represents the sunset. So remember, you have two things marching against you. You have mortality and you have time, because we are going to sunset. The law, if you had to testify in your local courthouse tomorrow, what will be the tax rates in 2026, you would basically go back to the 2017 table, and that's what you'd tell the court will be the rates. That would be your expert opinion. And they'd say, how do you know that? And you'd say, it's baked into the law. It's going to happen unless Congress does something to change it. Now, page 14, we talk about how Roths are taxed. Let's just assume you can get your client to that southeast corner of the chart. In the southeast corner of the chart, what we're really dealing with there is no income tax and no penalty. That's exactly where we need to be. Look up to page 15 with me, please. Now, theoretically, and I've run this by professors, this is absolutely true. If you have a Roth and a regular IRA, so you have a dollar in a regular IRA and you have another dollar, you convert that to the Roth IRA and you invest in the same mutual fund. If the growth rates are the same, the tax rate in the conversion year is the same as the tax rate in the withdrawal year, that Roth IRA and the regular IRA are going to end up in the same place, unless you have outside funding or you don't need the money after you reach age 72. Now, the chart on page 16 just proves that out. And run your fingers through this. Put your finger on the $1 million. It grows 300%. It grows to $3 million. You lose 40% to tax. Now you're at $1.8 million. If you had a Roth and you converted, you lost $400,000 to tax, $600,000 left, grows threefold. You're back at $1.8 million. You're in the same place. Now, strangely enough, life insurance is going to behave the same way, because you're moving the money from one tax shelter to another. From a taxable environment to a tax-free environment, the life insurance and the Roth theoretically mirror each other if you die on the day you're supposed to. Okay, if you die on the day you're supposed to, those theoretically mirror each other. And the problem is nobody knows. So the standard deviation of result in life insurance is less predictable than with the Roth IRA. Now, what we're looking for on page 17, you're looking for tax rate differential. In the ideal Roth conversion, I'm in the 12% bracket today, but I'll be in a higher bracket later. Maybe I'm 60 and my pension starts at 65. I start doing Roth conversions. Maybe my children live in Florida, or I live in Florida and my children live in New York. I live in Florida, my children live in New York, and you say to me, Bob, if we convert while you're in Florida, your kids won't have to pay the 11% New York tax when that money comes to them. And I go, walk me through this. That sounds intriguing. And then you say to me, but Bob, the other thing is, if we convert $100,000, you have $40,000 of cash you don't need. We can use that to pay the income tax and keep the entire $100,000 in the Roth. You'll never need this money after you turn 70 and a half. These are the ideas that drive a Roth conversion. I have them laid out very simply in the triangle on page 18 of your materials. Okay, so deferral beyond 70 and a half, using outside funds to pay the conversion tax rate arbitrage, and the 10-year coast period. What we mean by that is if I died today and I left you my IRA, Roth IRA, you would say to yourself, I'm not going to touch it until the last day of the last year when I'm required to take it out. So theoretically, December 31st, following the 10th year after I die. And think about how far out that is. That's a crazy, crazy number. And what that's going to do is just take your present value calculator, grow that at 7.2% over 10 years. You know what the result is, rule of 72s. You're going to end up doubling that money. All that growth is tax-free. That becomes a very important principle when you're comparing regular IRAs to Roth IRAs because of that 10-year coast, and because, especially if you're going to have an estate tax, because the 691C deduction is not efficient. So page 19, the successful Roth conversion is usually to avoid large jumps in brackets. You want to stay in the 22-24% bracket if that's at all possible. If you're wealthier, you want to stay in the 32-35% bracket. If you can avoid 37, that might make sense. If you're very wealthy, converting to 37, knowing that's going to go back to 39.6 or worse, can make some sense. When I say to you, page 20, I want to do a $500,000 Roth conversion, the first thing you say to me is, you're asking the wrong question. And I give you a puzzled look and I say, what is the right question, professor? And you say, the right question is, I'd like to do a series of conversions adding up to $500,000. And if that's the case, what you have to do is you have to test each of these conversions. You have to test converting from the middle of the 22 to the top of the 22, middle of the 24 to the top of the 24, etc. Each of those decisions is an autonomous, different decision. Page 21 just shows you what we're calling the Roth conversion triangle, and that's just showing where we are today on the bottom, and on the top we go back to the sunset rates. And if you're in that 24% bracket, converting today may keep you out of the 28% bracket in the future. So that may just keep you out of that 28% bracket in the future. That is an important consideration. Now, tactically, page 22, what else works? A tactical consideration would be if you had an unused charitable contribution carryover, current year ordinary losses, a net operating loss carryover. Maybe you have some AMT credits. Something is going on in your tax return that gives you the ability to convert to a Roth at a lower tax rate. Your client has a $2 million carry forward and a $2 million or $3 million IRA. Converting some of that is going to make a great deal of sense. Remember, now we're stuck with this 80% carry forward rule. You can only carry forward or use 80% of your offset 80% of your income, but it's still going to bring down the cost of a Roth conversion tremendously. On page 23, we get into this missing 691C deduction. Big picture. If I die, my regular IRA could be subject to both estate tax and income tax. Sometimes worse, the state might also have an estate tax and an income tax. And to prevent double taxation of that, the federal tax law allows an income tax deduction for federal estate taxes paid on what's called income in respect of a decedent. And we often call this the 691C deduction. There's a problem, though. There's a missing 691C deduction. Because if you pay a state estate tax, you're not allowed to deduct that from your federal income tax. And that is shown on page 25 of your materials. All I'm showing there is I have a $1 million IRA. I pay federal tax, I pay state tax, and then when you do my income tax return, you're only allowed to deduct the federal estate tax, not the state estate tax. So in essence, you're paying both state estate tax and federal income tax on the same dollar amount. Now, this results over time. Okay, this is a very important thing. Over a period of time, on a $1 million IRA, that's going to cause a little bit of a difference. Okay, that's going to cause a little bit of a difference of about $40,000. So you're better off by $40,000 on that issue to be in the Roth side. Write that down, $40,000. So if you live in Connecticut, there might be a $40,000 difference there per million if you're paying state estate tax. Now, that's only part of the story. Now let's talk about the rest of the story. So that's the beginning of the story, that it's better to die with a Roth IRA than a regular IRA. You could even consider immediate pre-mortem conversions for someone that's going to pass within the next couple of months. Now, fading 691C deduction, this is a different beast. Okay, this is a different beast. The problem is the 691C deduction is calculated on the value of the IRD at the time you die. Think of a person dies and you as their CPA take a photo of their IRA, and then you take at the same time that the estate tax on that, you take a photo of that estate tax. Those are frozen. It's not moving. Those numbers never move. If that $1 million IRA later grows to $2 million, your 691C deduction is still limited to the estate tax you originally paid. In the meantime, the Roth is growing tax-free. And here's the moral of the story, page 26, second bullet point. The postmortem appreciation is not sheltered against income tax by the IRC section 691C deduction. So that's not sheltered against the 691C deduction. That is a critical thing that we need to know. Okay, that's a critical thing we need to know. This results in the phenomena called the fading 691C deduction. And I show that to you on page 27. That is a big deal. On a $1 million conversion 10 years later, that is going to cause a difference of $180,000. How do we get there? We get there because the 691C deduction is actually frozen in time. And I'm going to spend some more time and come up with better examples on this. But these examples illustrate the conceptual point. There's not a person listening that couldn't replicate this just by using your own client's numbers and mirroring the spreadsheet. On pages 28 forward, I give you some cheat sheets on Roth conversions. These are kind of interesting. Now, always check on your own software, okay? And you have to take into account state income tax and state estate tax. But this gives you a sense. And if rates are the same, you end up with no advantage. That's one of the first morals of the story. If rates are the same, on page 28, we prove that there is no advantage unless you can hit one of these other points. Now, if we jump up to the next slide on 29, we're again looking at a 10-year period, and RMDs do not start within the period, but this is using sunset rates. The sunset rates make a big difference. If we knew the year that we know we're going to sunset from the regular rates to the Roth rates, will be a very busy November and December for Roth conversions. Everybody will be looking to thread that needle. Now, we also look at, on page 30, I took that up to a 20-year period of time. And that's designed to replicate that earlier chart. And you can see, if the rates are the same, no advantage. But as soon as we start to create rate arbitrage, this thing takes off, okay? As soon as you begin to create rate arbitrage, this thing takes off. What you're really worried about is threading the needle at a low rate at the time of conversion and then having a higher rate come up later. That's what I'm trying to improve on over time. On page 31, we just look at a 20-year period with using the sunset rates. You can see it gets even better. And then on page 32, I look at outside funding, okay? So we're going to pay the taxes with outside funding. That almost always creates a slight advantage for the Roth. Outside funding is good. Page 33, we're looking at the same thing, except we tossed in the sunset rates. That comes into play. And then finally, we're looking, if we bring it out on 34, like a 20-year period, you can see Roth conversions for a person in their 50s or 60s will always be better than somebody in their 80s or 90s, simply because you have more time. Now, if you really want to make this work, okay, if you really want to make this work, you're going to be looking for someone that will not need the money, someone that has outside money to pay the taxes, and someone where there's maybe some rate arbitrage. And if you go up to page 38, you're going to start to see that. Okay, so you're going to start to see the results. Now, these are really powerful. And finally, if you want everything to work right, jump up to page 39 of your materials. And what we're doing there is we're looking at a 20-year period, outside funding, RMDs begin for a regular IRA, but not for Roth. When you're converting even 24 to 24, over 20 years, you're coming out considerably ahead. With the Roth IRA. Now, on page 40, we jump into another technique called the multi-generational spray trust. What I'm going to do when I die, I'm going to leave my IRA to a trust for children and grandchildren. And then you are the trustee, and you very carefully every year sprinkle money out to the beneficiaries. And you try to get it out of that 37% rate up at the trust into a lower rate at the beneficiary level. This is a very powerful thing. So will this save tax? We have to remember, first of all, this doesn't really do any good with Roths. It's going to do more good with regular IRAs, just be more efficacious. Page 41, income is taxed either to the trust or to the beneficiaries. If income is accumulated, then it's taxed to the trust. If it's distributed, it goes on the beneficiaries' returns. That is Subchapter J of the Internal Revenue Code, IRC Sections 661 through 663. Page 42 just shows you trust tax rates. Nothing to see there. Just circle the 37%, just so you can see after $12,950, it immediately gets super ugly super fast. So that's your multi-generational spray trust. The technique we've been talking about a lot, and the expert on this is a gentleman out of Kansas City, Missouri, a professor, Chris Hoyt. He has his accounting and law degrees from Madison, teaches at the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Law. And what this idea is your donor, that's you, you are going to leave your IRA to a CRT. You're going to leave your IRA to a CRT, and then your child will get income for their life or for a term of years, and then when the child dies, the money goes to charity. Doesn't go to your grandkids, goes to your charity. Now, you could do one of these for your spouse. You could do one of these for your grandchildren, potentially. Now, you can't make this work because of certain tests, called the exhaustion test, until a person, the beneficiary, is 27 years old. That's today's interest rate. You're going to have to test that if you try to do this. Now, you have to have charitable intent. Without charitable intent, do not go anywhere near this. It can work only in a situation where you have someone under age 40 who's the beneficiary and they live a very long period of time, 40, 50 years. That's when this will work. It will create more wealth than just accepting the 10-year secure rule. For the most part, though, you want to make sure your clients have charitable intentions. But I come into you and I say, hey, I have two goals. Take care of my child who has no children of their own. And then when he dies, everything goes to my favorite charity. Okay, there we go. We're off and running. When my child dies, it goes to Children's Hospital. Everyone's happy, right? Now, the charitable remainder annuity trust, the beneficiaries receive a fixed percentage of the initial trust value or a stated amount annually or more frequently, page 44. So a CRAT, the annuity is fixed. Generally, with the CRAT, you are not going to be able to win this game. You're better to use a charitable remainder unit trust, okay? Charitable remainder unit trust is the better technique. And that we talk about on page 45. I just give you a little picture of how that works. Now, if you don't like the idea of the money going right out to your beneficiaries, page 46, you can take your traditional IRA and you can have it payable to an accumulation trust. You can not take the money out for 10 years. When you take it out, you can make that all income, and then you can sprinkle that into a charitable remainder unit trust. If you did this, you'd probably use an out-of-state trust. Be very careful. This is still in the lab, so to speak. We have to do some refinement. Maybe we'll get a private letter rolling this. You could also reverse this where the traditional IRA goes to a CRT, and then the CRT sprinkles everything out to an accumulation trust. So either of those models may be efficacious. If I want to do a CRT for deferral, but I'm still worried about my beneficiaries, then I would put the CRT first and then have the CRT pay to some type of discretionary trust. We would pay tax at the discretionary trust level, but we'd be pushing that distribution way out, picking up some time value of money. Now, on page 47, remember, very critical, remember when money comes out of a CRT, it's taxed under the tier rules. If you jump up to page 48, you can see the first, so I die, all the money goes into tier one. I die, all the IRA money goes into tier one. And then we take the money out of tier one. If we just buried it in your backyard and we were taking out 10% a year, at the end of 10 years, we would have taken all the money out of tier one. Now, let's say we put it to work. We put it in a fund that only generates capital gains. During that period of time, everything, all the earnings are going into tier two. And then finally, when the music stops here, everything is going into tier two. And then suddenly, after we burned out tier one, we're actually able to take capital gain out of this trust. That will work in some situations if you invest it properly. If you invest it for pure capital gain and you have your bonds someplace else, that will work better. So those are the tier rules. But it's very important to realize there is a possibility of converting ordinary income into capital gain. I have a nice chart for you up on page 51 and 52. Basically, what this is saying is your best plan is to do a lifetime CRUT, Charitable Remainder Unit Trust. If you view the charity as also your beneficiary, then you might be more inclined to do a charitable remainder annuity trust. Okay, so there, the charitable remainder annuity trust might be the better planning option. Go up to page 53. Now, here's an idea. Your client lives in a very high tax state. Call it Minnesota. And when she dies, she's a dentist, she has $3 million in her plan. When she dies, she leaves it to a Nevada trust rather than a Minnesota trust. Nevada doesn't have any state income tax. So for the first 10 years, her children receive distributions out of other property. During the first 10 years of this Nevada trust, the money comes out of the trust. You pay tax at the trust level. Now, that may not be the best result federal income tax-wise, but it's a good result from the state side. And if the children are already in a top bracket, then we're going to be in a different situation, okay? Now, what you have to watch out for is that the state of Minnesota will not tax this trust. In Minnesota is a good example because the Minnesota Supreme Court in a case called Felding just said that Minnesota does not have the right to tax out-of-state trusts in this circumstance. So you review the law, the state law of the owner, and you design a beneficiary form payable to a non-grantor trust in states with no income tax. Those payments are trapped in that trust. You pay federal tax at the trust level, but then when the dollars later flow back to the beneficiary back in Minnesota, what's going to happen is the state of Minnesota doesn't have the legal right to tax that. On pages 54 and 50, 55, 56, and 57, I have the trusts off Steve Ocean's website in there, and those might help you. Do not look at the statutes yourself. Don't take any of this as the gospel truth. Get an opinion from a CPA or lawyer in that state once you've explored this. But if that's how it works, you have a real possibility of doing this and saving considerable tax. If the Minnesota rate were 9% and this is a $3 million IRA, you can do the math. That's $270,000. Now, finally, what we want to talk about in the next several minutes is the insurance strategies. I'm up on page 59 of the materials. Depending how you look at it, there are a number of strategies that may well work. It's very important to view the Roth conversion as a bet-to-live strategy. Roth conversion is a bet-to-live strategy, and the insurance is a bet-to-die strategy. So it's balancing act. We're balancing a bet-to-live and bet-to-die strategies. My IRA Roth conversion hedge, okay? So there's four strategies that are in play here. The first strategy is I'm doing a series of Roth conversions, but I'm worried about, I need 25 years to pull this off. So I'm worried about my wife and I dying early. We hedge that with insurance. The next strategy, IRA relocation, is a little deeper. That's a strategy where I take money out of my regular IRA, I jettison that money into a life insurance trust, and then eventually when I die, that pays off and my children have that money in the life insurance trust. Now, this is another strategy that we need to take a good look at. So this works very well when a person is going to have a state or a federal estate tax. So if you are a wealthy person, you're a single person, you're over the $11.5 million, you live in Connecticut, and you have a state estate tax to deal with, or Washington State. I mean, you live in one of these states that has, the legislature has imposed an estate tax. By getting the money into a life insurance trust, you've removed it from the reach of the tax man. It's that simple on both the federal side and the state side. That will almost always make the IRA relocation strategy more viable than doing nothing or doing Roth conversion. Now, there's another issue we have to deal with. If somebody is already converted to the Roth and then they have to deal with an estate tax, you may want to fund, if you're going to have to pay the estate tax out of the Roth IRA, so the only big asset you have is that Roth IRA, then you're going to have to do something about that. You're going to have to take a very hard look at, should we buy life insurance to protect the Roth IRA from the estate tax? Remember, the first 10 years of growth are going to be completely tax-free, and you don't have to take the money out to the last minute. Having insurance in place may allow you to keep that money in the Roth IRA for the entire 10 years. That's the whole thing there. So on page 61, we talk about the new 10-year rule creates a actuarial risk of early death. Do we want to hedge that? If we need time to do our Roth conversions, we may well want to hedge that. Looking at this a different way, Roth conversions, page 62, Roth conversions will be the primary way in which those with large IRAs avoid exposure to higher income tax rates after death. However, the effectiveness of this strategy increases with time. A life insurance policy equal to the difference between the theoretical terminal tax and the terminal tax in the event of early death would offset this risk. So you represent Mary, a 60-year-old divorcee. She has $2 million in qualified plans. Mary's accountant projects she'll be in a 34% rate with opportunities to undertake Roth conversions. And basically, you learn that with the stretch, the RMDs to your only child would be subject to a 22 to 24% rate, but under the 10-year rule, that's going to get pushed up to a 32% rate. So it saves you 8 points to get over onto the Roth side of things, easy 8 points without anything else going on. You can figure out how much to insure that, okay? So you could figure out approximately how much insurance to buy. Keep in mind, page 66, your need for insurance is going to go down as you move more and more over to the Roth. So if you're only doing the conversions for Roth's sake, without relocation concerns, you could have decreasing insurance, or you could buy some permanent insurance with the rest being term insurance and just cover that short issue. Now, on the hedge side, again, we're just going to buy time. Relocation, look at page 68. The basic theory with Roth relocation, IRA relocation, is I'm going to take money out of my IRA, I'm going to jettison it into a life insurance trust, and that will blossom when I die outside of my taxable estate. And think about this for your clients that are going to be subject to federal and state or just federal estate tax. Remember, the math of this that we show up on page 69 is very supportive. This little chart only shows the income tax side of it. This doesn't show the estate tax side. If somehow using annual exclusions, you can move money over from the regular IRA to a life insurance trust without burning up any unified credit just by using annual exclusions, look at where you end up. That entire $1.8 million would be free of estate tax. If the rate's 40%, that's going to come out to $700,000+, okay? So that's a big thing, $720,000. And I think there's a lot here to think about. You have a great opportunity on a going forward basis to help your clients conquer these new secure rules. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access additional information on the SECURE Act. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, CPA, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.